Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and on the line I've got our Mayor for Waikato District. It's Jackie Church. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, morena, Aaron, and good morning, listeners.
So we've got a few things we want to talk about today. The first thing on my list is it's called Variation 3, which probably doesn't mean much to people, but this is the thing for some of the towns, not Raglan, so don't be afraid, folks, about creating urban areas where you can have three houses on one, well, three tenancies on one section, shall we call it, and you can go up to three stories. Have I described that adequately, or is there a bit more to it?
Well, that's what everyone is a basic understanding. That's why they call it Variation 3, is how I understand it, is that, again, like yourself, a non-planner and non-advocate or understanding of the RMA or the Resource Management Act. But, yes, up to three stories high and three across on a section. But we talk about medium and higher density and mixes of density. So yeah. Under our district plan, there's a variety of densities that we're advocating within our district plan and our housing strategy.
Okay. Now, this was I know there was a time when, prior to the general election, there was an agreement between National and Labor that they would bring this in, and then I think National stepped out from it. But is this basically the same thing that they were proposing back then?
Well, that's my understanding. I don't follow the ins and outs of central government so much. I'm too busy focusing on your residents in Whangaroa and Raglan and the rest of our district. But, yeah, this Variation 3 has been around for a long time, and our job, unfortunately or unfortunately, as part of local government and on behalf of, you know, our citizens, is to ensure when the government lands on policy that we follow those directives and the legal obligations. But obviously we also try to enhance, what I say, mitigate, and really advocate on behalf of the citizens as to what we should do in each of our towns subject to that policy coming through, including this. So, yeah, there's been quite a bit of pushback in terms of some people wanting it, some people not wanting it, some people concerned about it and how it affects our communities. And we always come back to the livable, thrivable, connected communities. We want the holistic well-being of our communities at centre and front. It's always a he tangata. It's always about the people first, and then trying to make sure that the policies that are imposed and the way that we manage them are as best we can for the citizens that we represent.
Okay, so my daughter is at university in Hamilton at the moment, and she's living in a building that fits exactly that that concept. I think it's only two stories. She's just finished, but that's by the by. But that area around the university is getting a lot of houses built like that. And the issue that is arising around there, obviously, is parking. So is that something that was part of this, or you've just gone to allow the properties to be developed this way first up?
So, again, the Variation 3 is central government policy, not ours,
yeah.
Right? Okay, so when we allow, it's not what we allow and what we don't allow, it's what government allows and what doesn't allow. That's number one. So, and you know, therefore, the fallout often of if people are happy or not comes back to us, but sometimes quite unfairly it's not really us that's doing it. How I understand it, again, because I'm not a planner, so, you know, happy to send you some more information if you want it and some links to things around parking. How I understand it is, government saw that, you know, housing was more important and that public transport and that other modes of transport were very important in urban areas, and therefore people wouldn't need their cars so much. Now, personally, from my perspective, living in a rural and provincial district council that's the second fastest growing in New Zealand, is that we need our rural public transport. Great, we have passive transport or walking, cycling, e-bikes, etc., but we still need cars. So perhaps when they've got tight urban centres like Wellington or, you know, for particular, that using the public transport and not needing cars is more viable. But places even as sprawled out as Auckland and many of our other urban areas, it doesn't work, and particularly in our rural areas, it doesn't work so much. But that's a policy, so we follow it. So even commercial buildings have the same thing, where they had a criteria around car parking, the percentage of car parking to space, etc. And my understanding, just if, you know, talking to different developers and business people and locals over time, is those have been more permissive, I guess would be the word.
Yeah, so yeah. You would expect the government to be putting extra funding into public transport if that was the case, but I think it's more like the opposite has happened, hasn't it?
Your perception's a great thing. We assume lots of things, right? You know, I guess when I think about New Zealand and the money, we've got, there's affordability, affordability and economics and crises affects everybody all the time in the nation. But at the end of the day, how I look at a nation is, if the pie of New Zealand's money is $100, whichever way we carve it up, somebody's going to win and lose, and people have got their own priorities of how that should be done. And the only way we're going to increase the size of that pie and share it out and fix some of the many concerns that I think you and I, Aaron, absolutely share, is if a government, if it's right, is around making the pie bigger around productivity, and that's GDP, gross domestic productivity.
So there's two, I guess
coming back to your question around, do we spend on public transport? Sure, we could. Whether they are, I don't necessarily see that, because we're going up through our Waikato Regional Council, as they've got the delegation for public transport for our region, and they're going out around consultation to how to do public transport in a regional sense rather than district by district. Right?
So you can't say specifically what's happened with the district council, because
the NZTA also, you know, has an obligation, but you know, the government at the moment is tightening all those reins around alternate forms of transportation, including footpaths, and how much money they levy through things like fuel taxes and put back into it, right? But actually, at the end of the day, if we're going to put more into public transport, don't disagree, but do we carve it off policing, education, health, the share that local government needs to fix our roads, all sorts of other things. So
I have to be honest, Jackie, can I leap in? I have to be honest, I think you're kind of repeating their own publicity for them, because it's pretty clear they've shrunk the pie and shrunk the economy by spending less. It's this thing we do where we talk about the government, other country, as if it's a household, and it's a bit more complicated than that. But they have, I mean, yeah, it's, I think I used the word austerity last time I talked to you, but I know that you and I can't really get into a debate about that, because you've got no control over that. What I wanted to check was, I was going to ask if the public transport funding to the district council has dropped, but then you reminded me that it's all been shifted to the regional council soon, isn't it?
Well, public transport's always been the delegation of the regional transport. And yes, it's not my rhetoric. It's actually just, you know, descriptions of how the economic in a very simplistic way works, absolutely, about how big the pie is, how big the money is. And, you know, actually, one of the really important things that we remember, and it's completely frustrated me for the last 14 years, is that our nation is the most centralised revenue country of the OECD countries, where 89% of the revenue is controlled by central government. Now, I would think that localism and having power and empowering localism and more money being spent locally, so we understand those nuances and particularly unique areas that and spend the money, would be much, much better, you know, issue. And that's, if I could change one thing in our nation, if we could move that dial a little bit so that we had more localism and more control of some parts of the revenue, I think our nation as a whole, across a whole lot of disciplines, Aaron, that you and I probably over a beer would probably discuss on coffee and absolutely agree on would be in a way. You know, it is complex, as you say, but public transport, sure. But at the moment, you know, we've just had a cut on our road and capital budgets by about 88%. You know, we lost $34,000 that we were proposing that central government through the NZTA gave us for capital projects for the next 3 years.
Did you say 34,000 or 34 million?
34 million, sorry. 34 yeah. million. Yeah, or some huge amount of millions. Mm. So it hurts, right? You know, whatever central government throws at all of us as citizens, we have to, you know, bounce up and make the best that we can with it, including things like, you know, modal transport.
Yeah, okay. All right, you have, moving on to another thing, you've sold off a bit of council land, so you've probably got a little bit of extra money in the coffers. But the question I wanted to ask, and this is a perception thing really, is what I was reading in the article, the press release put out by council, and I'm aware this is a little bit old now, old news, but the three sections or three properties that have been sold were all in like poorer communities, like recreation space in poorer communities. And I know recently there was a recreation space bought for Te Kōwhai, which is one of the more well-off communities in our district. There could be good reasons for this. As I say, it's a perception thing, so do you just want to talk to that?
Sure. From memory, we've got about 1,800 pieces of property that we look after own, and it's actually been a really long ongoing project for the strategic property team to evaluate those and to put them into pieces that we absolutely need to look after and keep. And others that we strategically we need to don't need anymore for the short, medium, and long term, and that would be based on things like our Growth 2070 growth strategy, which is that looking out 50 years plus, and to really manage also looking for opportunities where we know that we've got lack of space in particular areas that are either have grown and are behind in their percentage of, you know, land to the population, or where the growth is likely to be as well. So it's, some of these pieces only come up at times that we don't plan. They're just ad hoc demands on the market. So the mix of the managing the property market is really around planning, efficiency of assets, as well as opportunities that come up in demand-led. So yes, I think it is a perception thing, because actually what we're trying to do is make sure, and also part of it's around the demand of where people want to live. So it's trying to make sure that when we've got areas of growth like Raglan, like even Horatu's popped up in the last few years, Taupiri, that was never when I first started, you know, 10 years ago as an area of growth, but now it is, even though Haniwai. So these things pop up as new places of development, let alone previous places. I know in Tuakau, for example, on the 2012, so that's 12 years ago, they were lacking 25 to 30 hectares, that's about 50 acres of green space for the population at that stage. So across the district, what I'm trying to make sure that we do is we have a strategy, we look after the assets as best we can, we get rid of assets we don't need, we have a really good empirical cross-section of equity and data that's and looking for growth, and rather than ad hoc political decisions or, hey, it's easy to do it here, there and everywhere, that we have a consistency and transparency. So, but the fact that we're actually starting to look at what we need to buy as well as what we need to sell to try and at least mainly self-fund some of this in this huge growth area that we've got, I think is a good thing, and a much better way of asset management and business running.
So I have a question around council property. It's to do with the housing crisis and the inability we've had so far of getting developers to do low-cost housing. And it makes sense to me. If I was developing a plot of land, I'd rather sell it to the highest bidder than the lowest bidder. So that kind of makes sense within a market. But if there's spare council land, could that not be, I don't know, leased to a developer and said, you're doing some low-cost housing here? So we actually, you know, this is, and I have to admit, this is an idea off the top of my head, Jackie, so... just for discussion, right? Sure. I mean, what do you think about that?
Sure. Those sort of ideas, look, hey, I love when people come up with ideas, you know, ideas for solutions, because that's how we all go forward, right? And like, let's pick the ideas that have got legs on them and explore them and go forward and see whether, you know, they can actually be out. That's why, again, it sounds really boring about council, but rather than making ad hoc decisions about what's good and got for all of our citizens, right, is... That's why the housing strategy was really important to me, because it was a focus of our previous council before me, and this council too. Fortunately, it was a focus for them as well, about the whole, where does our council sit and where do our ratepayers sit within this whole complex, you know, another hot complex but really important part of our well-beings. And so we had a housing strategy. Now, the housing strategy is like short, like 1 to 3 years, five, you know, 3 to 5 years, 5 years out to 10, 20 years. And it links into our 2070 housing strategy. So again, we've got things that we do, and we're building our capacity around all these different alternatives, PPPs, personal private partnerships are one of the things to explore, making sure that we've got the right stakeholder group in terms of even the Housing Waikato. I was actually talking to Lale, who's the, I think he's the chair of the Housing Waikato, actually on Monday, I think it was, and catching up with him around where we go next, and making sure that we're touching base regularly about what the work that they're doing in that space, because it's not just about us and what we can do, it's what those other people around us are doing, including the central government in terms of fast-tracking for developers, as well as the percentage of affordable houses to low-cost houses, affordable housing, social housing, Aaron, you know, and that genre, as well as, you know, making sure. And I guess so we're doing a lot of that space, but following a strategy that we've engaged with, and that democratically we're going to follow, rather than doing ad hoc run on the back of our bottoms.
Where can people read the housing strategy?
The housing strategies will be with the rest of our strategies online, but I can share you a link so you can share that with your listeners if you like.
We'll do that.
And that kind of will frames up, because also that impacts, you know, it's kind of like we've got the annual plan as a yearly plan, then we've got our LTP, which is 3 years of going into 10 years, right? But then that 10-year strategy, we've got an infrastructure strategy for 30 years, and then we've got a growth strategy for 50 years, 2070. So all these plans and all these other ones hook into each other. And so it's kind of like a Venn diagram with overlapping circles of interest to make sure that they're all in line with the consistency of making sure that the ship or the waka that we're all on and paddling, that we're paddling in a consistent direction that's going to be good for all of us.
So the housing,
the key being agility around that, and that housing, you know, we've built that into that because, you know, because along the way, what we thought of might happen, say, 20 years ago might be a hot topic now, which is housing, but we've got to have the agility to adding other things like a housing strategy into it so that we're still online to where the directions are going and making sure that they're right fit for purpose regularly. Every 1, 2, 3, and 5 years, we regularly review that, but making sure that we're agile enough to add things like housing strategy to make sure that not just social housing, if we can support MSD ELK with that sort of work, or kāinga ora with low housing, or PPPs with developers, as you said, which is a really good idea, or is it an opportunity with in the future around council land being used in different ways, all those sorts of options, but progressively doing that in line with the other stakeholders that are experts in those fields. So yeah, that's just future-proofing our district for the future.
So Jackie, can I ask just a simple question?
Sure.
The housing strategy, will that inform the next district plan review?
Well, the district plan review, we're still, I think we're looking at some part of it's operative now around the Variation 3 at the moment, and we just signed that off. And then they're saying the first quarter of next year, but I'm saying, I would say, you know, about the middle of next year, we'll be making that more operative, the whole thing. A district plan review, how I understand it, is that non-planner is, you kind of do it every 20 or 30 years, it's not, but we will look at doing a variation to it. With the things that have come out through this very long process that
have already
taken
so
life to.
Variations.
So, yeah, kind of a list.
Variations, yeah, rather than the whole thing at once.
Yeah, and because remember, up until, you know, it's been quite hard for council planners because we've had Flint amalgamation in 2010. The council and the planners and the consent teams and the building teams have been, whether it's all the fast growth that we've had and quieter times, they're having to deal with two district plans, one from the Franklin District Council days, plus the Waikato old plan. And then on top of that, they're then amalgamated into one whole district plan, which is a new plan for the whole of the Waikato, called the Waikato plan, which of course we're still working through, you know, the anomalies and, you know, the going through the Environment Court and things like, and negotiations at the moment with that. So it's been a long process. So it was not something we'll do again very soon. That's what councils do.
Okay.
But in that, we'll do a little variation on that. But this is, as you say, right, how the housing strategy informs that and vice versa, so that we understand. And really, I think the bottom line for everyone, sure, Variation 3 is going into particular areas, and that's policy, but also urbanising urban areas and having and not using up all of our, you know, our kai land, perhaps, as I personally think is a good idea, you know, for the future of 100 and 500 years out. We don't want people eating pine cones. But and the services are more centralised, and then communities like Raglan's got great, you know, great connectivity and services like your doctors and your schools. But we also need to make sure that even out in our rural areas or in our outskirts of our urban areas, that we have a mix of options of housing for the variety of people to choose or have availability, right from low cost, more intense usually, to you know, bigger plots of land for work or for you know, food production, etc.
So that's
the trick.
Jackie, I've got about 5 minutes left, so I've got three questions I want to ask. We'll go with the simple one first. The staff had proposed in the new LTP to do a traffic light trial on the one-way bridge here in Raglan, and you had the pre-engagement for the LTP, the long-term spending plan, and there was like 88% of people said no. It sounds like staff have got that message and it's not going to happen. Is that what you've heard?
Yes, we've just discussed it in council. And yes, that's right. And we actually understood that before we went out for consultation, that it's likely what it is, because, you know, it's an important piece of infrastructure. We wanted to double check that. So it wasn't a surprise, because it was sort of intellectual property and knowledge that we already had. It was confirmed by, you know, councillor, but and that, so can't confirm it because we've got to go through the long-term plan approach. But, you know, that was really good feedback, and thank the people who put their input into it.
Okay, cool. All right. We're having a meeting next week here in town about our potential land-based wastewater disposal system. Now,
yes.
In the context of a long-term plan, we've been asking people what services can we cut because there's not enough money anymore. Are we going to be able to afford approximately $40 million? How's the rest of the council going to feel about that money going to Raglan for a land-based disposal system when a lot of people might say a pipe into the sea is okay? Like realistically, I'm looking for a realistic assessment of what the rest of the council is going to think about that.
council or the people who actually pay the money, like ratepayers?
Well, but, okay, so the question is it just Raglan ratepayers or is it going to be a general rate as well?
So how our water is it? That's why I asked, not trying to be smart or anything, it's just, like, I always go back to, you know, you as citizens, or, you know, I'm one too, I pay rates as well. So our waters are set up as a district-wide fee. So everybody pays the same who are connected to the waters. So whatever goes on in Raglan, and actually I'll go back to, when we did a lot of, you know, pumping around wastewater, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago, even more, there's been a lot of work put into the Raglan area, and a lot of the other towns that were reticulated, the services for them were just like business as usual, while we actually wanted to bring up speed and deal with some of those issues around Raglan. And so again, it comes back to, it's a philosophy of all in together. If you had if you tried to divide it, it would be so complex, it would be really expensive, but also it means it's way unaffordable for others and cheaper for others. So the district-wide works from a philosophical point of view, but absolutely around asset management, need, consents, and the obligations of legislation, plus, you know, we're ageing infrastructure, all of those things come into that complex issue. So do they care? Of course people care, because people always feel that there's a lack in their own community and someone else is getting more than them. And I think that's part of our society at the moment as well. And it's easy for people to share that online and make a big voice of things, those things. So I feel there's a general sense of lack. But at the end of the day, this is from a council point of view, that the philosophy of having district-wide, where we do the manage the assets, which is what we do as effectively and efficiently we can, under the consent of Waikato Regional Council, under the policies of central government, like Te Tūruhi Whaimana, etc., and we do our job and obligations on behalf of the people the best we can with the money that we can afford, and be clear about what we can afford and what we should do, what we like to do and what we can afford, and that we're all really clear about those things and those expectations.
But we're running out of time. We're running out of time again, Jackie. Do you want to spend $40 million on it? Are you going to vote for that? Like,
well, I can't tell you what I'm going to vote for, but all I'm saying is that what's best for our communities in terms of their infrastructure is absolutely the right thing to do around waters, absolutely.
Okay, all right. Well, the one other thing I wanted to ask about, we mentioned before how you had asked people what were their priorities for spending and the pre-engagement for the long-term spending plan. I keep calling it, I put the word spending into the LTP so people know what it means. And there was a bit in there where a lot of people said, oh, we don't need grants. And I feel like, as someone who knows what happens with the grant system through the council, I feel like people don't actually know what the grants are for. And I think something that's missing from that discussion is how I think it's the most effective money that council spends, because it usually goes to groups of volunteers. And if I could use the radio station as an example, we run on the smell of an oily rag. We have lots of volunteers. We live on about a quarter of the funding that the community station in Hamilton has. And I imagine if the council was to replicate what we do, it would cost about 10 times as much just because there's no volunteers. So, and that's one example, like really, really, really efficient spend for council. So I'm kind of worried that those grants, which do all sorts of wonderful stuff in the community, are under threat at this point in time. Can you talk about that?
Okay, I can give you my personal opinion, because obviously that's part of the LTP and lots of discussions. Okay, so number one, I came from a service and volunteer background. Frankly, I was Judge Franklin's finest person for my community work, and that's 60,000 people. So that was a surprise to me, but just because I was out there doing volunteer work. So I absolutely understand volunteer work, right? And I think the ratio, when you say 1 to 10, you guys do an amazing job, absolutely exemplars. But I think the ratio is $1 to 20.
Okay.
And so it's smart money, all right? Guess the answer for me is it's smart money, it's about well-being. Now, central government has a different idea about sticking to the knitting, as if we don't stick to the knitting, because we bloody well do, as opposed to the other, what they would probably describe as more airy-fairy, not in those words, of course, but, you know, those well-beings and around volunteer work and volunteer organisations, that 1 to 20 is the ratio I've always understood. And so absolutely, we need to be really clear about what we do and have transparency and consistency and processes and policies around criteria, but absolutely advocating for that, absolutely. And in fact, Well Energy would be an example which we're capital partners on, and if the submissions would be transparent. I actually made a submission to talk to them around, because they had changed away from the philosophy of less grants and more like giving back to each individual household. And so I actually talked to them, and they actually changed their ratio back to a bit more around grants. In terms of that.
That's
that was
good.
Actually part of their original, because
I'm pleased to hear that.
To their foundating But that was reminding them of their founding document and what their intention is when they were first set up. Mm. So all it did was remind them of what we should always go back to where we started and why we started and obviously evolve. But when we go too far away from where we were, but that's one example where I recognised that change, but it was a really significant change, like a lot. So it's kind of like, well, what are you thinking and why? And it's your founding document. And so they did a reset on that.
Okay, well, that's I'm pleased to hear that. I'm reassured to hear that. So, yeah. I guess
so it's about the people, Aaron, eh? And that's what I love about you and what you do and your fellow volunteers at the radio station.
I have to admit, I am paid, but everyone else here is not paid. So
Well, I absolutely acknowledge them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Jackie, thank you heaps for your time this morning. Good to talk to you. And I think we're going to see you again maybe in the new year sometime, I think.